My video interviews are cringy. How can I improve my performance? To succeed, you must ace three elements: production, presence, and content. First, production. If you do not look good or sound good, your answers will be diminished. Use a desktop or laptop computer, never your cell phone. Never, ever tilt your laptop screen to frame your face. Put your computer on a stack of books or buy a stand. The computer's camera light should be eye level. Invest in a quality halo light and test your volume. Second, presence. The camera lens represents the recruiter's eyes. Don't look down or away at your notes because you will appear distracted or worse, disinterested. Take note cards to the left and right of the lens. Lock in. Three, content. Now this is critical. Prepare. Download and use our core and categorical interview worksheet to help rehearse your anticipated responses.
Good morning, good evening, depending upon what part of the world you're in. If it's Friday, you know it is the CEO series where we bring together the most innovative, inspiring leaders from across the globe. And our guest today is my very dear friend, John G. Self, who is a global, he's led global executive search firms working in six countries. He helped people enhance their careers. And you saw the video and talking about something as simple as a video interview. So John, with that, welcome.
Ron, it's so good to see you again. And it's a delight to be back with you on the show.
Thank you so much for making time for us. You're in Dallas, Texas. What time is it there now?
Well, I'm at right outside of Dallas and it is about 8 to 8:04 here Central Time. But we have something in common. We're going to be as hot as you know what today, too. So we're about we're expecting 106 today here. And I don't know what it's going to be in Dubai, but I'm what it was today. But I imagine it was a little warm.
It was a little warm, about 112 now at 5 o'clock. So that's
well, I won't complain.
don't need to complain. You don't have anybody that feels sorry for you on this side. So let's talk. You've had an amazing career. You and I have known each other a very long time. And you've been able to keep reinventing yourself. I mean, from one industry to another, carrying it forward to the next step. How did John become John?
Well, boy, there are a lot of people that ask me that, particularly my wife. it's really interesting. I was lucky that I got started in my career in the news business, which fostered curiosity. It taught me about a sense of urgency. And it taught me, you know, that that curiosity, and then you had to be a good storyteller. And I think that just led, people said, my gosh, how did you get from the news business to selling helicopters to recruiting globally? And if you look at it, there's a common thread. There's some things in each one of those jobs that carry forward. The curiosity, the research, the being able to tell a story, and to get it right and to have that sense of urgency.
That's so cool. You mentioned two things that stood out for me was curiosity, you know, trying to figure things out, digging a little deeper than the surface. And I think lots of times people see a job listing and they want to post for a job listing. They're just looking at the details on the job description and maybe do a quick glance. So curiosity would mean I would dig a little deeper, understand more about the company, possibly their strategy, what they're trying to achieve.
Well, you know, one of the things, and I don't mean to jump ahead here, but one of the accomplishments that I'm about which I'm most proud is I did a lot of recruiting. And, you know, you're going to have your mistakes. But at the CEO level, in 27 years, I never had a mishire. Never.
Whoa.
And some of it's luck. Okay. Somebody once said, I'd rather be lucky than good. But what I did, Ron, is I did, you know, a lot of the job summaries you see online, I understand why they're done the way they are, and I understand the process, but they're laughable because they don't really tell you a lot about the organization. I would produce what I call a position perspective on a CEO search. It would be 30 to 50 or 60 or 70 pages long. And we talked about the culture. We talked about the politics. We talked about, and sometimes the client says, oh, you can't tell them that. And my response always was, this, don't you think this will be the least embarrassing time for them to find out?
Yeah.
And so I was always about full disclosure. Sometimes my clients didn't like it. I even got fired once and sued because the client had done some things, a hospital here in Texas, with that lab scandal, and they were trying to cover it up. Nobody wanted to talk about it. But if you bring a CEO into a smaller community, you got to know a couple of things. What are the politics of this community, and what the heck is going on within the organization? Because there's not a lot of wiggle room if you don't have a cultural match. And I was, that was one of the things, but, and I think I trace that back to my days as a reporter and as an investigative reporter, and getting people to tell me stuff that they had no plans to tell me.
So you talk about storytelling, and, you know, in a video interview, you've got to tell a story. You know, I don't have anywhere near the experience that you have. And I said, think about the interview that you went through for the past half hour. Did you tell a complete story? What did you miss? If you had to do it over again, what would you talk about? And you use that for a building block for the next one.
Absolutely. I have a form that we use, that core and categorical form, and you can break the job down into categories. And in each category, you've had successes, you've had some setbacks, you've had things you're proud of, maybe something you hope to God they don't ask you, but you get answers. You prepare all of that, because if you have the answer to the question you hope they don't ask, you're going to be confident and self-aware. And then you list your stories or your illustrations. You know, and sometimes stories aren't real long. Sometimes they're just a segue line. I was in St. Louis on a stormy night interviewing a CEO, and I said, tell me about your weaknesses. And he said, maybe we better call my wife first. And when I play, I videotape a lot of my interviews to show my boards.
Yeah.
So they could see the candidate before they decided who they wanted to invite, which is another reason I was successful. And I've been doing that since the mid-90s. But the board, they were kind of like this, and then they leaned in, and you could see it. And it was remarkable.
Transformation.
If somebody wants to ask me my weaknesses, and, you know, and I, you always try to have some line that you can use. And I said, you know, I had a great dad, but my father really had a good sense of who I was. He said I could chat up a brick wall.
Okay. He could tell the story.
Yeah. And then you sort of, and you say, that is a strength of mine, but it's also a weakness. Now, let me tell you how I try to manage that, and how it's made me a more thoughtful leader.
So this is what you impart upon people that you're, so that's from two sides, the client on this side, and you're prepping someone or myself or whoever it is to going for this particular interview.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think that one of the big problems that people have is they don't know how to prepare for an interview.
Yeah.
And the second problem they have is, we were not reared by our parents to brag about ourselves. And yet an interview, which is the most challenging, difficult kind of business communication, is all about a little bragging about yourself.
Yeah.
And so one of the things I do in my coaching practice now is I help people get over that resistance to tell their story. And it sometimes it's a challenge. But people who tell stories, they are memorable. People remember stories. They don't necessarily remember facts.
I had someone tell me that, you know, the other week. They said, you know, I always remember you because the story you told was about, and I said, I got a whole host of it depending upon the situation.
You know, I want, sometimes a story will be, it'll be just a line, and sometimes it's spontaneous, but it sticks with you. I was teaching an interview course for the American College of Healthcare Executives, that global professional association that meets every year in Chicago. And somebody said, well, that we were talking about interviewing, I mean, recruiting, and they were talking about how it was really frustrating. I said, you have to understand, recruiting is like getting married after four dates. Okay. And because it's kind of superficial and it's very transactional. So you have to ask the right questions. You have to be prepared. And then you have to be a good storyteller, because at the end of the day, what you really want is you want to have the privilege of turning down the job if you don't feel it's right. For you. And so you always go into an interview with that attitude, I want this job.
Okay. Okay. So is that, it's changed so much from years past.
Oh my.
People trying to find a job. It's like 180 degrees from someone specifically, I'm going to say a senior executive who's been around a while and may have risen up the ladder. And now they're looking to do a change because of whatever reasons, but maybe they hadn't interviewed in 10 years.
Well, You know, the first thing, if people, when they come into the job market, managers, executives, if they haven't been in the market for 3 or 4 years, they are stunned at how it's changed.
That's right.
It is now heavily automated on the front end. So when you apply and you submit your resume online, your odds are that process, your odds on average are about 150 to 1. Nice. Now, what you have to do is, so your network becomes important, and we can talk about that later. But the other thing is that they send a generic resume. They don't customize it. And there are too many resume writers out there that are taking people's money and then saying, I optimized it for the industry. The problem is the algorithm that's evaluating the resume is job summary specific. And so now there's something else that's going on, Ron. They now have scanners. You have scanners evaluating the resume. They now have scanners circulating through LinkedIn, scanning thousands of profiles in a matter of minutes, picking out hundreds of passive candidates, and then contacting them. And a lot of people say, oh, is that what that was? You get that kind of LinkedIn picture. That's when you know it's a LinkedIn kind of generated deal. It's a search guy from a real search firm. But it's an automated generated letter. We have this job. Here's a little bit about it. If you have an interest, submit your resume to this link. And here's the link for the job summary. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You still have to customize your resume.
Yeah. Okay. So in other words, get used to customizing it, because depending upon the company, because I've always thought that a generalized approach is kind of like putting a CV in a bottle and you go to the ocean and you throw it out and you hope somebody will pick it up somewhere down the line, because that's about it. You mentioned those odds there, and I'm saying that's about it.
You know how it's really remarkable, and something I want to share with your listeners. For every 7 or 8 resumes that are submitted for a job, for every 10 resumes submitted for a job, 7 or 8 are never seen by a human. And a lot of them aren't even kept. They're just discarded into that big, dark black hole that people refer to. I wish I had $5 for every time somebody said, I submitted resumes, and it's just like I submitted them to a dark hole. And that's what happened. And you said, well, how did you customize it? Well, what do you mean? My resume writer told me it was optimized. But you have to use keywords. You have to teach people how to do it. You would think that this would be something that's pretty obvious. You know, I've learned something recently in trying to master the intricacies of YouTube videos, that one of the best strategies is answer specific questions. And then I also learned that sometimes answering specific stupid or silly questions is even a better response. Mm-hmm. And what you have there is we sometimes assume people understand things, and they don't. Ron, I apologize. I think we have some bandwidth issues here.
I got to figure out a way to fix this.
Tim? technology is sometimes frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah. Very true. This whole thing. Yeah, it's very frustrating.
I'm not sure how much of that last answer I gave that you were able to hear.
Yeah, if you could get that again. I'm kidding. Okay, let's try that again.
I'm going to let you ask the question again.
Yeah, but you know what? I guess
I saw you lock up, and it was a distraction.
Yeah, it was a distraction, and I lost word. I was talking about the keyword analysis. My background is not on, but I'll fix that in a bit. I was talking about keyword analysis because I had used that years ago, trying to. Of a rudimentary approach to doing that.
And you broke up again, so let's try it one more time.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's
But the future does not wait. It can be designed and built today. Discover the unlimited possibilities. Welcome to the Future Innovation Summit, the fourth edition.
Back. Thank you so much.
It's so good. I was worried that maybe it had been on my end, but I've experienced this before in the past too.
Yeah, I think it may have been on my end. I've got this new system here, and it's supposed to be, but I'm going to call them tomorrow morning, that's for sure. So the question I was asking about the old way of doing that, we used it. There was a tool out. It's called Wordle, I think it was. You could take a CV, a resume, and put it through there, and it gives you an analysis of keywords, how many times it was mentioned. And then you can take the job description, do the same thing, and you kind of match up keywords, kind of. If strategy was used 15 times in the CV, in the job description, but it was only used one or two times here, how do you connect those, which means you may have to do a rewrite? Is that kind of how, the way it works now?
Well, yes, and people are using ChatGPT to help them with that. And there are also programs that you can buy online where you can put your feed in your resume, feed in your resume, the job summary, and see. They have an app, they have a sort of a generic applicant tracking system process that you go through. And you get, I think, a couple of two or three for free, and then you pay a monthly fee. So those tools are going to be very, very helpful, because what we're seeing in the automation in hiring today is very early stage. Mm-hmm. And people are, you know, people get mad, well, this is not fair and all this other stuff. And I said, first of all, when you're talking about this, if you want fair, come to Dallas in October. It's called the State Fair. And number two, if you want to have an argument with a computer, that's going to be a career limiting process. It's only going to become more dynamic. I mean, what we've seen in the last 10 years is nothing short of tectonic shifts. And it really affects. And one of the things that I've noticed is that, you know, a lot of people who have had good careers in the past, when we were starting out, you could sit back and you know some people and get be discovered. Well, the days that Lana Turner was discovered at the Schwab, drugstore on Sunset Boulevard, which actually is not where she was discovered. She was skipping class and was across the street from the high school at the Top Hat Cafe having a malt when she got discovered. But that doesn't happen anymore. And if you sit back and wait, you're going to be a loser. Okay. You're not going to fulfill your career. And so automation with all of the scanning and tapping into passive candidates, when they're doing the passive candidate scans, your odds go from 151 to maybe 2,000 to 1.
Really?
So how many jobs, you know, the old thumbnail is that 50, 60, 70% of the jobs are never posted for executive level positions. They're based on referrals. And so now more than ever before, and this is going to make a lot of people twitch. You must build a robust network. And that network, unlike earlier days, now must be in sync with your career plan. And you do that because there's research that shows that the average human can only manage about 140 to 150 contacts. And it's the Dunbar rule. Robin Dunbar was a British historical archaeologist and did this study and came up with that number. And I believe it's true. And so you have to target. So you have 20 or 30 friends or family. So you've got maybe 175. You've got to target those people. Where do you want to be? Well, Wayne Gretzky famously said, I'm successful not because I skate to where the puck is. I skate to where the puck's going to be.
Going to be, yeah.
And so you have to think about your career plan in those terms, and you have to think about your networking in those terms. And we now call it networking 3.0.
Okay.
Because that's changed pretty dramatically, too.
Yeah, it has changed. And, you know, I see people that are passive about LinkedIn. They said, I don't really update it. I'll update it when I leave a job. And I'm thinking, my thought has always been, that's your billboard to the business world. Now, they've got the Facebooks of the world, TikTok, and all these things. But I'm thinking the branding on LinkedIn has to be precise.
I would say this, you know, LinkedIn, and I'm a 19-year veteran on LinkedIn. Okay. I was, the year after they started, I stumbled into it. And stumbling into it is probably the right description. But LinkedIn had a lot of promise of peer-to-peer networking. That's gone. There's 780 million people on the platform now, and it's being flooded by Bitcoin's people. Oh, I want to learn from you and all that. You've all got those emails, and now we're getting text messages. Oh, is this not Robin? You know, that scam about, you know, so, and that's pretty pervasive. What I tell people now is forget about the peer-to-peer networking. That's a loss. That's gone. They're never going to be able to fix that. What you must do is you must recognize that LinkedIn is now what it always probably was, a billboard. And you said it, that's spot on. And what you have to do is you have to not only, you can't just put it up and not do anything until you start looking for a job. Mm-hmm. That's craziness. Yeah. Because, you know, you may miss the job of your dreams because the scanner didn't see your profile or didn't think it was very, very interesting.
Yeah.
As much as an algorithm finds something interesting. And so I tell people now, if you're in the market, you got to be posting 4 or 5 times a week.
That's right.
You got to start using video. And you really have to, post organic content. You need to post, interesting news stories that are relevant to your position. You have to put many case studies, your successes. You have to do all of that stuff.
Yeah.
And if you don't, it's like working for a brand company and then not managing your brand.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things you mentioned at the first part of the interview before the technical difficulties came in, I think lots of people are hung up on, well, I don't want to brag. I said, you're not bragging. You're just talking, you had an accomplishment. That was a big accomplishment. That's not bragging. It's bragging when you're talking about things that you know you had nothing to do with it.
my response to, I said this to a candidate the other day, for God's sake, get over it. I mean, get over yourself, get over this. This is, you can argue with this and say, I'm not comfortable with this. Okay, great. Well, how do you feel about sitting on the sidelines? Because that's where you're going to end up. I know people who are brilliant leaders, believe it or not, really smart people that had to retire early because they couldn't. They lost their jobs and got pushed out politically, 55, 56, 57 years old.
Yeah.
And they could not because they didn't have a network. Nobody they didn't stay in touch with people and nobody knew where they were, or a lot of their network was older and retired.
Yeah.
And a lot of them took early retirement. What a waste. What a waste. And don't be that person.
Well, this is what I teach at a couple of schools, and I tell younger people that's getting MBA degrees. And I said, this is your product, whether you want to believe that or not. And from day one, getting out there, you got to always try and make sure the brand is where it should be. I don't want to be seen as a brand. And I'm kind of like, you get over it, because you are. And people are looking for that. How can you talk about the accomplishment that you had? Many case study. Here's what we face. Here's my approach. Here's what happened as a result of that.
You know what I do is, and this goes back to my early training. When you come into my coaching program, we are hybrid. So we have all the nitty gritty stuff that you kind of got to understand. That's all online. So I can spend more time in live coaching sessions talking about, we explain some of that stuff, but, building on what we've talked about online. And there are video courses with illustrations, PowerPoints, that sort of thing. And one of the things I do early on is I do a research interview, and it's about an hour, hour and a half long. And I dig in and I say, tell me about your mom and dad. Tell me about where you grew up. Tell me about what your parents taught you. What were some of the great experiences? I grew up in a retail bakery. My God, I can talk about the smells at holiday till the cows come home. But that we all have those stories, Ron. I've never met anybody that didn't have interesting stories. They just keep them. People aren't going to be interested. Nonsense. They will be, especially if you learn how to tell them. And that's part of the fun of my job is say, okay, you've now just said this. Let me tell you how I would word that if I were in your shoes. And they go, wow. One guy who was a commander in the Navy was coming out. I went through for about an hour mock interview and I said, okay, now here's where you need to do this and say it this way. And finally, he said, whoa. I said, okay, is there a problem? He said, where does all of this stuff you're telling me come from? I guess that's one of my gifts. And I'm so thankful to God that it is. But people, not everybody's going to embrace stories like I do. But you have to be a good storyteller. You're going to win the job or lose the job at the interview table.
Yeah. Well, you talked about staying ahead of what the industry is heading into. I remember when Macy's was going through a big change years ago, and they were moving to more of an e-commerce model, which is a lot of retail stores are happening. Bed Bath & Beyond is a prime example of that. weren't able to make the switch. And someone called me to connect with a person and mentor them. And I told him to send over his CV. He said, well, my CV is not really updated because, I haven't updated it in years because I've been working here for 15 years or whatever it is. And I'm thinking, why am I even wasting my time? He sends it over. And everything he's talking about was stores. There was nothing about e-commerce. The industry is going to e-commerce. Right. It's going to be hard for you to be able to transition. So eventually I said, you know what? You may need a professional writer. I don't really do that. But think back in your strategy sessions. Was there anything moving towards e-commerce that you can talk about? Because no one is hiring an executive that came from the store's background.
Brick and mortar is toast. And you know, we're still going to have brick and mortar stores. But just look how Amazon has changed the landscape of retailing. And even people like me who are very active on YouTube, we now have affiliate marketing. People say, tell me about your watch. Okay, well, let me send you a link. Okay. I mean, this sounds kind of crass, but when you are building out a company and you're building coaching, you know, I know people who are in this business that are making $30,000 to $40,000 a month on affiliate marketing with Amazon.
Yeah.
And so, that's how incredibly ingrained online shopping is in our culture today. And I would say that, you know, people, yeah, we all know that people don't like to change. I get it. I mean, one of the things I loved when I first got started in the news business was top 40 radio news. God, I thought that was the greatest thing in the world. But look at what's happened to radio. All those big name jocks are all dying off. It's all more formatted and it's all more about, you know, the computer selecting the music because it's safer. It's market research. It's pure. So that's gone. But, you know, the change is I can now drive from Boston to San Francisco and with my iPhone and never hear the same song twice.
Exactly.
And so we've lost some of the personality. We've lost some of the community, but we've gained more access to entertainment. I think the real key thing is going to be for people and looking at their career is how do they grow their careers and how do they use community to make their brand stronger? Mm-hmm. You know, in my business, people within 5 to 7 years, a lot of the information that people pay me for is going to be packaged online with AI.
Yeah.
And it's going to be easy. It's not going to be a bunch of links. It's going to be stuff that is there. And it's going to be cleverly packaged. And somebody's going to break through and make a gazillion dollars. What will people pay for me? We're creating community where people can share experiences and where we can have, you know, question and answer sessions, meetups and things like that. They'll pay for that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll pay for that. They want a place to go ask questions. They want somebody to listen to them. And they want somebody to you know, when they get frustrated, they want somebody who's going to be understanding and give them encouragement because it's looking for a job absolutely is the worst thing in the world. Yeah.
And it's a job within itself. Because one of the things you talked about there, you know, in coaching executives who may not have been in the market for a while, don't understand the passive piece. And I came across an article for MasterCard. And one of the key points they look to develop the next level of leaders, they want industry associations. They want to see, are you making speeches in the industry? Industry knowledge. But I'll ask people sometime, I said, so what are you reading about your industry? What are you reading about the transition from the bank on the corner to the bank in the cloud, from retail to e-commerce? And I get this look, which means they don't pick up anything to read, or they're not listening to any podcasts. It's kind of like a journey now that you have to kind of get hooked into.
It is a branded journey. You have this journey you're going through and you've got to take care of your brand and your brand. You know, I mean, it's just so important and you're not going to achieve the fullness of all your gifts unless you pay attention to that. And that's terrible. I mean, the only thing that's worse than that is to have a job on Sunday night and you're so depressed because you have to go to that job on Monday morning. And we've all been there. Oh, Lord. I once worked for a company who the boss married his assistant and then kept her on the payroll. And if you did something wrong, and I ran a 24-hour-a-day EMS system, and if something happened and he got all upset, you got a call from her on Monday that ripped you a new one because you made him unhappy. You know, and that's one of those Sunday night, oh, God, jobs. And
So the term for that is called Sunday night angst. I just finished reading a book, and the name of the book was Dying for a Job or something along those lines. And here's a stat. There are more heart attacks on Mondays than any other day of the week.
Well, as a person who had open heart surgery a little over a year ago, I mean, I can identify with that. Gosh.
So how do one of the other things you mentioned, as you were talking about AI, Chat GPT, here's another finding. As I talk to people, senior executives, and I said, so what, talk to me about your thoughts on AI. Talk to me about what you're using Chat GPT for. And the response could be, what? What is
oh, that's just it's not very accurate. It's, you know, that people, they start downplaying it. I've said, I had dinner at one, a movie night with friends, and my son was in medical school and he looked at it and he said it was just silly. And I thought, you know, one of the things that first year medical students should learn to do is know what they don't know. I mean, it's extremely sophisticated. And it's only going to get more sophisticated.
That's right.
And it's going to put it. Nobody knows which jobs are, you know, I mean, data entry, that's probably going to go away. Some retail experiences are going to change dramatically. And I tell people, quit trying to predict the future. Be prepared for the future. Start learning how to manage your career. Don't wait around 5 years. Oh, I've had this great job and I haven't done anything with my resume. Whether you're happy doing what you're doing or not, every year when you sit down and review your career plan, how did I do? What did I achieve my goals? And you have two sets of goals, your career goals and the goals that you make with your boss.
Okay.
And you got to look at both of those because they're not always in alignment.
Yeah.
And you know, and I say, get your wife, get your spouse involved, because if you want to move up, you're probably going to have to relocate.
Yeah.
And awesome. You're not going to relocate and leave her behind. So you gotta have this family sort of approach to career planning, but it's really important that that you look at all those issues and you gotta update your resume, keep it current. The other thing I am so big about, I'll hold this up. I'm a journaler, and okay. When I was doing a lot of speaking at colleges, I said, yes, I know. I mean, you're a kindred soul, my friend. You're a kindred soul. But I always tell students, if you don't take anything else from this lecture, take this. Start keeping a career journal. And when you get a job, put a little tab in it, you know, get one of these little Amazon things. And what's your job? What's your title? Who are you working for? What were you being paid? What was the expectation for performance? Then go through and talk about, okay, first quarter, you know, I did this, or this was my annual review, and keep a record of all that. I can tell you, everybody says, oh, I'll remember. No. If you're young and starting your career, I can assure you scientifically, there's a correlation between the color of my hair and the ability for me to retain thoughts in this brain.
So
I write it down. And the other thing you do is you keep track of your accomplishments. Mm-hmm. And the most important thing you do is when you make a big decision, write it down and be reflective and say, you know, did I do it right? Could I have done it better? What? Force yourself to think back. And it's sort of like Rand Stajan, who runs this incredible leadership development operation in Dallas. He calls it game filming. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like the coach on the field. He's looking at the game, but he's looking at it across the – he can't see very well. So he's talking to guys up in the press box, and above them are people filming it so they can go back and look and say, what the hell happened? And what you want to do is play that game film back in your mind and say, okay, how could I have done this better? That's what executives – one of the tools executives use to improve their leadership ability.
Yeah. I use a process called the 3 W's, and the 3 W's is at the end of every day. I said, what worked today? I may have done a webinar. I may have had a big meeting with someone. What didn't work? If I had to do this again, start tomorrow with the same, what would I do differently? I do it daily, and I do it on Friday afternoons. And you know, I do it on Sunday night to prepare for the next day. And you know, when I held this up, every place I go, I have this. I've tried the digital approach with notes. I can't do that. I need to write it down.
I'm still a paper guy. I mean, I still look at stuff, but I retain better when I write it down. A fairly well-known actor by the name of Matthew McConaughey just wrote a book called Green Lights. And for somebody who's going through a transition in their life, it's a wonderful book. It's not one of those lame Hollywood memoirs. It has the grit and has, but he basically put the book together from going back over 35 years of journaling. That's where the book came from. And I have found that it's one of the most meaningful things. And I have this journal. This is my idea journal. But I also have a sort of a plan my day. Okay, it's on my calendar. It's digital. But I also write it down. And at the top, I use this great planner because it doesn't force me to go into some format that somebody else concocted. And at the top, I do write down three things. Three things that I'm grateful for.
Okay.
Every day. And people like Oprah Winfrey and Richard Branson and all these people who do it say that it has brought, when they do it consistently, that it has brought incredible meaning to their lives. And I really encourage people to do that because it keeps you connected. And whether it's your faith or your values or whatever, it keeps you connected. One of the saddest things I ever heard, a CEO said, but what if I run out of things to be grateful for? I thought we need to go talk.
A long talk. So let me just connect with a few of our listeners. Jim Moy was a prior guest on our show.
Hi, Jim. I enjoyed his show as well.
Yeah, he was cool. He's always cool. That's my good buddy from Saudi Arabia who now lives there. Marchka, Sergo, Christiana, Najam, thank you for listening in on the show and being a guest of the show. There's so many things that's going on, but I look at people like you, myself, and we're reflecting back on careers that shape, because my career has gone through so many loops, U-turns, detours, whatever you want to call it.
But it's been rich.
At every point, when I look back on it, I kept climbing steps. Did I see that then? Martin Luther King had a great quote. Take one step above if you can't see the rest of the staircase. In other words, you keep.
That's a great quote. You know, people have asked me what's been key to my success. And I say, let me just highlight one area. One day I was going down the hall. I'd been working in PR, just come from the newspaper business, been there 3 months. And they were going to talk about doing a helicopter ambulance program. And I was going down the hall to a meeting and I heard this loud conversation between my boss and a neonatologist, as only they can argue. And then I heard this deal, and you're going to do that effing helicopter program. And I need more money for my unit. And besides, you don't have anybody to run it. And I kind of looked askance because I thought, oh, God, what is this all about? And my boss looked up, caught my eye, and he said, John Self's going to do it, and he'll sink with it or swim with it. That 12 seconds changed my life. Now, here I was. Within a year, I'm the national marketing manager for the aircraft company. Now, they're flying me around the country first class. I got a little bit longer hair. I got my Mod Squad off the rack department store suits, slightly bell bottom, but not too much, you know.
And real cool though.
I thought I was the coolest thing in the world. But you know what? I wasn't a trained salesperson. I recognized a hospital 4 out of 5 times. I knew less about helicopters, and as a friend of mine said, what possibly could go wrong? And I sold 13 in less than 3 years.
Wow.
And it was 14 was on the way. And somebody said, what was the secret to your success? And I said, I didn't know it at the time, but I subsequently heard a quote that was attributed to Charles Wesley, the Anglican cleric, that said, when a man is on fire with enthusiasm, people will come from all over to watch him burn.
Yeah.
And I believed in the concept. I was enthusiastic. I had the knowledge. And that propelled me. And I would say there's so many leaders that I don't want to be enthusiastic because they didn't teach us that at Harvard, you know, poppycock, you know, enthusiastic leaders. They're so infectious. People want to follow enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. And the other thing they want to do is they want to follow people who understand the soft side of leadership. There's a great book that people ought to read. Barbara Bradford Haggerty's book called Life Reimagined. She talked about the W.T. Grant survey. It's still going on at Harvard. Mm-hmm. And they were trying to figure out what made a good manager at a retail small department store in a small town. And he was struggling. He hired some people, thought it would be great. They failed. Hired other people, and they didn't think they'd be great. They were huge successes. So he found a guy named Arlie Block, I believe his name is, a psychiatrist at Harvard, and he gave him $68,000 in 1936, which was the earth.
That's a lot of money.
And they said, help me understand this. And so they conducted the study. The military got in on it because they heard about it. But, you know, they found one common characteristic. Back then, the leaders were all men for the most part. They found one common characteristic. The good leaders had mothers that imbued upon them a strong sense of love.
Mm-hmm.
And Dr. Valiant, who ran the survey for 35 years, it's still ongoing. It's the longest longitudinal study in history. It's still going. But when he retired, he said this: if you can't love, you can't lead.
Whoa.
And that is, and that's when I heard that and read that in Barbara's book, and she's a former NPR correspondent, it just almost knocked me in the floor. And I thought, and that stayed with me through a lot of my recruiting. And I was looking for those characteristics. I think that's one reason I was, you know, I had my setbacks, but I was overwhelmingly successful.
Yeah. Well, it, you know, in a lot of cases too, it's taking a chance, you know, the steps, you don't see the steps. Because the reason I'm in Dubai to this day, I always go back to that. I was working for Xerox in one of their consulting practices, and I get an email from a search firm in Saudi Arabia to say, would you be interested in interviewing for a job as CHRO, Chief Administrative and Chief Human Resource Officer? I jumped at the opportunity.
Yeah.
And I tell people, if you got an email like that tomorrow, would you pursue it? And if they gave you the offer, would you pursue it? Would you pick up and leave? And what happened is a lot of people would just give me this look because they would not do that. But everybody wants to talk what they want to do. But when the opportunity presents itself, would you take a chance on you?
You know, one of the biggest career limiters? Safe zone. I'm safe. Oh, yeah. I'm okay. I know several people that are just incredibly interesting, talented people. And they're doing jobs that they're not really happy in.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people move quickly and you show them a pathway and they're on it. And sometimes people, they remind me of, you know, you buy a new dog bed and that dog comes in and turns around five or six times before he finally settles.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that when people are doing career change.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'd really encourage people not to be afraid to reimagine themselves.
Yeah.
And you may need a coach to guide you, but you know, somebody said, well, what's the key? You have to have passion. You have to have proficiency. And the third thing is there's got to be profit. Now, if you have the first two, passion and proficiency, but there's no profit, that's a hobby.
Yeah.
And if you have proficiency and you know profit, that's boring. That's boredom.
Yeah.
And so you really need to look at those things. And, you know, one of the hottest growing segments of the economy is the learning education business, that daily stuff. I mean, look at what Dean Grazioli and the big guy, I just went blank.
It's
$1 billion a month or a day. It's just huge. And you can use something like that. Is a side hustle to make your transition. Talk about things that you know about and you like doing. And you can do a lot. I mean, it's just people are afraid and they don't need to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I tell people, I said, I look forward to Monday mornings. I can't wait till Monday mornings. When I look at Sunday, I'm like, come on for Monday. So I said, if you want to trade off to get to that, you got to figure out what it is. Spend some time self-reflecting because I enjoy Mondays. I enjoy getting up on Mondays. I can't wait to go to bed on Sunday night to do what I do. I never had that feeling in all my life, all of the years of working.
I suffer something that's probably worse. Friday afternoons, it's Friday here. Hey, Friday, it's only two more days this week. I love what I do. And I sometimes have to push myself back. So this past week, I've slowed down a little bit. I've been doing repeats on my videos. I produce 5 videos a week.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is. It is. I'm thinking about going down to 3 days, but yeah. I also didn't do Thursday lives. But it is, you know, sometimes you can get so caught up with what you're doing, you have to put some limits on it.
But
I'm lucky. I have a terrific wife who's, I refer to her affectionately as my CFO. She reminds me when I'm off track. It is, you know, people, they need to be a little bit more flexible with their careers and what, and that book, Life Reimagined, it's a great book, but a great theme.
I got to check that out. Well, you know, one of the goals of the show is to always create an engagement platform for leaders like yourself to talk about career journeys, because people always see the top of the pyramid. They don't see the bottom of it. And today you brought technical difficulties. You brought the full game to our mission as what we're trying to do. And we thoroughly enjoyed you as a guest.
Well, you're so kind. I think a guest, when they're with somebody they know, like, and respect a great deal, it makes it a more comfortable experience.
Oh, yes.
And the technical stuff, notwithstanding, I mean, you're in Dubai and I'm in Tyler, Texas, for gosh sakes, that we had a little technical glitch, so be it. But we overcame, and so I'm glad to have had the chance to be with you today. I love to talk about this because it's something that I just love and am so passionate about.
Okay, before we close, give us where your location is, social media, the TikTok, is it under your name, John G. Self, or?
I'm at YouTube, which is one of the primary areas I'm building out now. It's at Guiding Your Career, John G. Self.
Okay.
I'm not a big Twitter person. I'm becoming less enamored with that for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is bad leadership. I'm on Facebook. I have a Facebook page. We're creating a private Facebook page for community. I'm on LinkedIn. I was on LinkedIn probably the January of the second year of their operation. There were about 5,000 members then. And I have 15,000 followers on LinkedIn. I'm doing a little bit of Threads, whatever that is, you know, trying that. Yeah. But, I've got a pretty robust social media presence, and, that is an interesting evolving process. Cause it's all driven by algorithms too.
Everything is today.
Absolutely.
So thank you so much, John. Just hold on for a second as we close out and I'll come back.
Cheers, my friend. It's great to see you.
Okay, man.